And when my parents went grocery shopping, they'd just leave all us kids in the car. Which is why to this day, I can still discreetly pee in a beer bottle in a public place. I'm one of 17 brothers and sisters. I know, if I look familiar, we're probably related. Or you're watching too much porn.
Hello, welcome to Carnival Personnel Sideshow. I'm Jacques.
I'm Joe.
Did you have to think about it for a second? It was a teleprompter.
I was thinking of maybe coming up with an alias for some reason. You know what? I've been doing this for so long. I thought, you know, let's mix it up. Do I need to be Joe every single time? But stick with the program.
You know, we have a guest today who I don't know if I just saw at one of Greg Bogus's Luna shows or if it was a lineup I was on, but her comedy just really hit home. You know, her cadence, it's very family based. She almost reminded me of like my cousin Cindy talking to my Uncle Joe, the way she talks to her dad, like in the bits. And I've not met her dad, but I've seen her now 3 or 4 times, and I really feel like I know her dad, and her would be Alana Foden. So, Alana, thank you so much for jumping on today.
It's so my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I don't know where to start, but I'll start at the beginning. How long have you been doing this?
I started comedy in 2003. It was always a dream of mine, and I had a life-changing moment that year. I decided my life wasn't where it was supposed to be and I needed to make some big changes, you know? And so if you want things to change, you have to change. So I put myself out of my comfort zone and I put out to the universe to start pursuing being a comedian. Horrible stage fright, like just literally terrified to speak in public. The first time I spoke in public was to fight a speeding ticket. And I had to take the stand and my words wouldn't come out. And my heart was pounding so bad and the blood rushing through my ears. And then my nose filled up and my eyes started to water. So I was like basically choking and crying. And they reduced my fine, completely worth it. But I never thought I'd get over it. And so I took a comedy class and I went to a party. And it was a home novelties party. I thought they were going to show like pictures, vases. I don't know. It was sex toys. And at first I was horrified. And then I was like, oh my God, this woman is so confident. And maybe if I practiced in front of small groups talking about an uncomfortable topic, it would become comfortable. And I figured it was just like, you know, you go up the rungs of a ladder one rung at a time. And then when you get to the top, you can do it. You're on top. Mentioned that whole idea to my therapist. He thought it was a really bad idea. So I fired him and I signed up and did it anyways. That's kind of how I got my start in comedy, in parties, selling sex toys in small groups.
That's actually my next step in comedy is selling sex toys. So it's kind of a,
Well, I mean, it just makes sense. Love and laughter, right?
Yes.
See, I had almost the exact same experience because when I said, you know, Joe, I think I'm going to get back into comedy, and he told me to go fuck myself. And then I thought, well, I'm now going to have to go get a toy. And so
you didn't have to.
I didn't have to.
You can use the other hand. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I've heard you talk that before, and it's just the most fun, like, entry into the most insane world with insane people. Where did you take the comedy class?
It was a great startup comedy class. I think it was about 6 weeks. Like, anybody thinking about getting into comedy, serious about doing comedy, a class is a great way to start. One, because our world is really kind of small, so you can get to know everybody. And two, it's a great way to learn, like, the etiquette. Like, you can just show up, but you don't necessarily know the etiquette. If it's a sign up, if it's a preset show, if comics can attend for free. So a comedy class is, I highly recommend it. But it was 2003, so.
That's
20 years ago.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. No,
that was like 3 weeks. Yeah, no.
It was BC, honey. It was before COVID.
Oh. I almost wanted to climb into the internet and punch somebody the other day because they felt this, some prick out there felt that the need to post like last week was March 25th, 1984 is when the kids were in Saturday detention at Breakfast Club. And it triggered me so much that that was a 40-year-old that I wanted to find out who felt the need to post that and find a way to go and punch him in the face. but yeah, so 2023, you know, it's funny. I'll start by a little bit. It's like, yeah, I took a hosting class last year, and it was just a one-day thing with Mike Katrobis, Wayne from mine and Joe's really good friend, Wayne from Open Mic Payne took it with me.
Yes, he's awesome. Yep.
I said it at the class to Mike. I posted online after that I felt I stole money from Mike because it was $75, and the amount of knowledge he stuffed in there, and it's exactly what you said. It's like, okay, well, here's the basic stuff about the, but then he was like, you know, here's the little things that you wouldn't think about. The second time you go up to do the little opening spiel, he just unplugs the mic. He's like, that's going to happen. You're going to pick up the mic. It's going to, you know, all these tiny, but also how to deal with bookers, how to deal with Rudy. I mean, it was one of those things where it's felt like it was a 6-week thing, but it was a day. And even now,
oh, I bet that was awesome.
You know, you have the same thing where you are in this crowd where comics want to come and just work out material at your shows, which is nice to see the community of people wanting to still get better. And it's not technically taking a class, but it was about 2 months ago. I got a text message from Steve Bjork on a Thursday. Hey, I'm working on a new bit. Do you know where there's a mic tonight? And I don't, McGinnis, Andrew McGinnis, who's kind of a buddy. I knew he was going to your thing. And I'm like, oh, I said, I kind of know Alana Foden, but she has a mic there. He goes, I love her. So he connected with you.
I love him too, yeah.
And then I showed up and I saw, you know, I got there just in time for you to open and then for Steve to work out material. And it's nice that, you know, you still, as a comic on Steve's level or your level, are looking to collaborate and work on things and just learn. So going to a comedy class is great because you make connections. And as long as you keep those connections, you can still learn from each other, which is amazing. Enough. Sorry, I sidebar.
It's important. It's incredibly important. People, I've told my children, education will take you far, but people will take you further. So always treat them right. You know, be kind, be respectful. My grandmother said, you make your bed, you lay in it. And that also creates your future opportunities. So always be good to people and the good will come back to you.
Did you find the community in comedy back in the early to mid 2000s? Was different than the comedy community today?
So I think that I'm different. I don't know how much of it has changed. I know when I got into it, I felt like it was a little dark for a couple reasons. One, I saw that women weren't getting paid the same as men. That really bothered me.
Go on.
What's that?
Go on. Women
Go
don't
on.
Get paid
okay.
as much
so
as men.
So I decided that but the pay rate was the pay rate. The job is the job. And it didn't matter if you were a man or a woman. And so I wanted to create that. And so my company, Comedy on Purpose, that's kind of one of the purposes. And the other is when I first started going to Boston, Faneuil Hall and Comedy Connection, you had to sell 10 tickets. You had to bring like 10 people. Then they had to have like 2 food items. And then I remember showing up and I had like 23 people show up. And you're new, you're scared. And then the guy is like, we might not put you on tonight. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me right now? Like, do you think I'm going to organize and bring you like 4 tables of people again, not to have my 5 minutes that I've worked so hard for and promoted for you? And so right then, that was like my third time to the stage. And I decided I'm not going to do it like that. I'm going to do it a lot differently. And first of all, I'm not going to require comics to bring audience because they're shitty audience. Sometimes they get up and leave right after their friend performs. Also, when you're new in comedy, you're new. Not everybody is great out of the gate. Sometimes they have to deal with stage fright like I did. Sometimes they got to tweak their material and not talk about penis and poop. You know what I mean? Like, they got to get better. And by the time they get better, their friends don't want to come and see them anymore. Yeah. So why burn out? Why burn out the friends? And why not have an actual authentic audience? So my first comedy room was Fody's Tavern in Nashua. That was easy. It's my cousin. My last name is Foden. We're related. He's one of my favorites. So I reached out to him and he was using his basement space. It had no distractions, no TV, no dartboards, and bar service. So I put together shows. Those were mostly funded by me. I didn't own my sound equipment at the time. I paid a friend to like DJ the shows for $50 a night. He was just getting started into the DJ business, so it gave him a leg up, and it helped me produce shows. We charged $5 a ticket, and it was a showcase. So I have like a formula for it where you have to have an act that's really, really good at the end, so people feel like they got their $5 value. And I book 8 to 10 comics, only expecting 8 to show up because of the 80-20 rule. And then you're not disappointed. You know what I mean? Then it's just like, oh, well, that's how kind of I expected it. So I'm planned for that. And so one really good act who's going to close the show, another really good, strong act who can open your show, because you got to start strong and last words linger. For people to return. And then I always had at least 3 brand new comics. And more often than not, they were the ones who always showed up. I don't make them go first. I think that's horrible. You give them what's called the sweet spot, at least second or third. And usually I host to hold the space.
You know, and that's how come, you know, I was at that show, because I've known McGinnis for a while. I think that was his first booked show. And it was really and there was a Anthony and Wayne. I don't know if just Wayne or Anthony was with, you know, Wayne too. But it's like, hey, we know this guy. It's his first thing. And yeah, as a comic or as a band, you know, when you have to like the pay to play thing, it's just so, you know, it's so tough to get over that. So it's amazing that you help so many people get their first gig. That's another thing, you know, circling back to how I found, you know, came across your path. Bogus, I know at least 15 people personally who their first real show on a real nice stage with lighting and a curtain behind them was the Luna Theater through Greg. So it's absolutely nice. Awesome. Have you ever run classes? I mean, just listening to you talk now, I mean, you have such a great approach.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's so funny because I started writing a book and then I stopped, and I should really get back to it. I did do some presentations for Boston Comedy Chicks when they were a thing. And I very much enjoyed that. I love educating. I love helping. I know that my purpose, you know, is to bring more love and laughter to the world. And if that helps bring a person to get to the stage to produce more of that, I feel like that's a good cyclic effect. Yeah, I mean, I would consider doing it. I'm a student myself. I read a lot. I signed up for Kevin's Mill Yard Comedy, sketch writing comedy class that's going to start this coming Tuesday. I'm very excited about that. I feel like if you can keep learning. Like now I want to take Mike Katrobis's class because you spoke of it. I'm like, I didn't know he was doing that. I would love to hop onto that. So of course I'd love to share. And I do have an outline kind of put together that I've presented pieces of, and I should get back to working on that. But for now I'm happy to just be a student.
Well, I want to talk about your booking. You are the only booker that I know. Oh, what is it that you don't have? Oh, penis. I was like, what is it? So well, no, everybody who I deal with, and I'm so grateful that I've become really good friends with some of the, like, I've got to know them and work with them, but they are all cis middle-aged white guys like me. You know, I mean, a little past middle age, I think.
And straight. And straight.
And straight, you know. Look, mostly straight. I'm not saying anything but, like, I basically let Ryan Gosling do anything he wants to me. Other than that, and I don't think I'm on an island on that one. But seriously, did you get into booking because of maybe how people like you just, other than the not pay, I mean, were you not getting shows, or did the other women on the bill get like the same kind of, hey, you might not be going up treatment that you were experiencing, and you kind of wanted to be a voice?
Yeah. So I got into it, one, again, for the pay equality. Two, my kids were young when I started, you know, this was 20 years ago, and they're now 28, 26 and 22. So it was a different ball game when they were all under the age of 10. I couldn't be trudging into Boston to keep practicing. So I decided I would just create my own business and I would do it my way. So I started with that one comedy room. That grew, that got my name out there. And how I did it was very specifically a nerd. So I came up with a plan and I put it in a spreadsheet, and then I put it into action. And how that was that everyone I spoke to, everywhere I went, I gave them a coupon. It was a 2-for-1 coupon. So it was a $5 comedy show, but you had a 2-for-1 coupon. So really it was only $2.50. That filled the room. Once I got the room successfully filled, I would harvest emails. So I would literally go around the room and invite people to join my email. I still do that today. And that's what helps drive the success of the shows and keeps building the audience. I do a monthly email newsletter to let my customers know where I'm at. Also, if they're on Facebook, I have a private group page, Comedy on Purpose, that people can join, people can like, and I can set up my events there. I use Constant Contact to do my emails. That gets through most spam filters and allows links so that I can promote all the shows that I have happening. And then I just repeat that. So then the next show, join my email and keep growing my email list, growing my customer base. I'm very good at remembering people's names, and they like being remembered when they show up to another show and I recognize them. I wanted successful shows for comics who were brand new to be able to have honest feedback from the audience. That was gentle and kind. From Fody's Tavern, what was my next? The Arena was another comedy room that I ran. Then Anheuser-Busch was another one. Whippersnappers. There was another one in Hilltop. So at one point, I was running 5 comedy rooms, 4 or 6 of them, 2 shows on a Wednesday, 2 shows on a Tuesday, and a show like every 1st, 2nd, and 3rd Thursday. And running the shows 2 on a night, I got really organized. And so the first 5 comics would open at one room and first 5 at another. And then they'd literally drive to the other rooms and I would just flip flop the show. So who opened at one show would close at my other show and vice versa. And I loved it because it gave me stage time that I enjoyed as well.
Well, that's it.
Now COVID.
So
fuck COVID.
So listening to you speak about your comedy experience, I see that there's a major focus on the business side of it. How much in your experience do you balance, I guess, like percentage wise in your work time and comedy, you know, aside from family life, like in your free time, how much percentage wise would you say is it devoted to business and then the other side devoted to writing and performing?
I love that, Joe. So my life is very much out of balance right now and I'm trying to get it back. Before my divorce landed me back in the workforce, I was 100% business and self-employed and sustained on that. Having to get insurance, make adjustments, I find that now my full-time job is Monday through Thursday, 40-hour work week, so it's 4x10. So that allows me Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then, of course, my weeknights, but it's out of balance. I earn less money working a full-time job, but I have benefits than I did working full-time for myself. So I'm working towards that shift and recently opened an Airbnb.
Oh, okay. We will get to the Airbnb.
I'm hoping that is... it'll help me be more financially sustainable and I can leave the workforce.
I do want to talk about the Airbnb, but yeah, how much time do you take? Like, do you have, I want 10 minutes of new material a year, or I want how much time are you allowing yourself to actually, and do you have like, I want to have this many, you know, new jokes, or I want a whole new routine.
Oh, I got you. Yeah.
How much time do you get to do that?
So I would say I do get to meditate on it every single day. I like to walk. I record my sets. I don't video. I always audio because then I can listen to it anytime. I love show nights because specifically show nights, I am working my material at least an hour on those days. So if I have two shows a week, I got 2 hours there. But every single day, I'm working on my material. I think of something, I write it down. I have a notes section on my phone and I utilize it. I love writing new jokes. Sometimes they fit, sometimes they don't. Ideally, I'd like to get to a point where I'm paid for my writing because I'm really good at it. And I love this. I love the written word and how we can play with it and how we can use homophones creatively and tickle people. So for now, I would say maybe 4 hours a week I get.
So you are a comic with now, you know, kids in their 20s. My next question is, are they at all interested? Are they in this? And when something goes on in a conversation with your kids, do their tentacles go up? It's like, oh crap, mom's going to use this in a bit now.
No, not and in fact, they don't think I'm funny at all. I'm like, you guys have no idea how cool I am. And they're like, the fact that you have to tell us that you're cool signifies that you're not. But my kids, I think, they're all extraordinary. Actually, no, I don't think it. I know it. My kids are all extraordinary. And each of my daughters have been on my team selling sex toys. So they're very well educated. As well as I understand that they made sure that their brother knew where the clitoris was. So
oh, good.
I feel like they're enlightened. And as adults, they let me know that they did go through my shit.
I think when teaching comedy classes, you should probably also instruct male comics to find where the clitoris is. Just, yeah, you know, it's kind of a universal knowledge thing.
I love that, Joe. And it's 100% true, you know. So I'm taking that sketch writing class before you had asked how much time, and my life's out of balance and I haven't been spending enough time writing and in being in that creative space. And so I'm excited that I signed up for the sketch comedy writing that Kevin has offered at Comedy Mills. And my kids now, they loved it growing up because they were in so many sports. And my daughters did travel teams, which if you have kids in travel teams, it's expensive. It's not free. It's, the tune of $6,000 a year to be on the team. And a lot of the kids had great talent, but they didn't have a lot of affordability. So one of the things that I was able to do is organize comedy benefits and comedy fundraisers. And I got to do a lot of that for the school and for the sports programs. And I'm proud of that, you know, that we were able to raise that money, that we helped kids get to Disney, that we helped kids get to Washington, D.C.
Did you help them get back? Because like, it was just a one-way thing.
Yeah, we let them go and let them come back. Yeah.
Well, the sports thing is expensive, but at least it's time consuming.
Yes.
You know, this is new to me because my kids weren't sports kids until this past couple years. And my little guy plays, you know, football. He hates the word soccer and all his friends are either from Brazil or Portugal. And, one Saturday I'll have a game in New Hampshire, damn close to the Canadian border. You know, and I'm like,
right.
Do we really have to be going this far for 12-year-olds? We live in Lowell. There's a bunch of other kids that we can be playing with.
Right.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. But wait till they go to Florida.
well, and I do. And, you know, I have this conversation a lot with, you know, whether you're, you know, where like, you know, me, Anthony and Wayne are, or where you are. It's such a different world when you have kids, because you'll see a comic being, oh man, I it was so tough getting here. I'm so busy. It's like, oh man, what did your kid have? Oh, I want to have kids. Then shut up. then you shut your mouth now, because as busy as you think you are, you know.
Yeah, you just wait.
So I do. Yeah, I mean, you get it. With the business side of it, it's how many shows do you think you do a year that you produce versus how many shows do you get to just be a comic, and how do you like the shows that you're running, or do you like just showing up, telling your jokes, and going home?
Oh, I love being in charge. Yeah, because you can control more of the elements. But I also love the non-stress of just showing up and taking the stage. And I would say I produce more shows than I am booked on, but I'd like to see that shift happen now that I have less home obligations. I love open mics, and I like being the bullet taker, because, you know, one of my jokes used to be, I have three teenagers, you can't hurt my feelings, you know. if you can hold the space, if you can keep your mind working when nobody's listening and then the waitress is taking the order right in front of you and somebody's like, Tony, from the back of the room, and you can just keep going and hold your material in your mind and still get some laughs or engage some people and not have it hurt your feelings.
Yeah. Being a comic sometimes is like being a ghost, you know, like you have to sort of like haunt the room and interact with the room, but don't let the room affect you, or like be able to just sort of like go between the two planes of existence. It's like, I'm performing, but I can't pay attention to the jingling and jangling of the, you know, server bussing a tray at the same time, you know?
Right. Right. And then there's those rooms where you can see people's faces, but you don't want to hold eye contact for too long, because then you're going to skeeve them out. But then there's the times that the light's in your eyes and you don't even know if the audience is there or not.
Does it throw you if somebody you recognize is in the audience? Like if you spot somebody, like, does that throw your thing off, or do you like, you know, do you change your cadence, or is it just like, whatever?
Not anymore. I used to, yes. And like, I remember the first time I performed in my hometown for a really, really big show, I was like, you know, felt kind of like people from high school showed up to see me fail, not to support me, which isn't a good place to come from. But now I don't want to say I care less, because I don't want to sound careless, but I really don't care.
That's the attitude you have to take.
And if you don't like it, too bad. And I don't really change too much or anything other than, as Jacques had asked, like, you know, do you work your material? I listen to it and then I go, ah, I should add that. Or my brother will say something to me and I go, oh my gosh, I remember that. I have to add that in somehow. You know, I have to add that in somehow. Like growing up, we had an electric fence that lined our property. And, you know, we got clotheslined on that fucking thing. Would all end up with like a red line across our necks because of the height of it. You know, you'd just be running along and then you just clotheslined by an electric fence that would also singe your neck. But we were used
to are you sure you weren't in prison and you were trying to escape? I just this sounds like you might be misremembering.
That's some fence, because to have a specific wire at neck height and only neck height, it's like, are you hanging laundry on this thing at the same time?
No, they were poor and it was intermittent. But anyway, so we'd have friends over and would play this game, would be like, hold on for as long as you can, right? Whoever held on the longest. Like, and that's why we didn't have very many friends.
Oh man. And so when you talk about doing other people's shows, how far, and this is a legit question, because recently I've got a bunch of shows and it's great. And one of the reasons I think I get these shows is like, I don't mind driving 2.5 hours each way to do 15 minutes. You know, I wouldn't do that to do an open mic or this, but you know, those Smitty shows, those chunky shows where there's going to be 100 people in the room.
Absolutely.
It's so worth the 5 hours, you know?
Oh yeah.
But there's so many people, it's like, dude, you know, $50, $75, it barely covers your gas. It's like, uh-huh. And it's a,
right.
What do you think this, what do you think the next step is? Shows in your living room where people come to see you because the Zoom thing's over. So would you take bookings if it's like at this point where you have so many shows to concentrate? Okay, I'm going to drive to, I'm trying to think of the names of the town, Whitford, like Maine, which is probably 2 hours for you. To maybe 2.5 hours. Does that factor into consideration why you're doing your shows and not doing as many book shows because you don't have the time to make those trips?
No, I'd travel. I'd go. I've done it for parties. I'd do it for comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It, not an open mic, like you said, but yeah, a show with a good audience in place. That's, you know, that's what we live for. That's what we do.
Oh, and I got, it was, you know, somebody couldn't, as you say, the 40 or the 80, you know, 20 rule. I was going to a show. I was hosting it. It was one of those Smitties. I got a call that one of the comics was going to make it, and I was able to call Wayne. And Wayne was a little nervous because this was a big, probably the biggest room he did. And he instantly found out it is so much easier doing comedy in front of 100 people who paid $25 on a Friday to drive to laugh. And and after the show, you know, it was like 4 or 5 people like, how long have you been doing this? But like, he basically built a little following and it's like, I don't know if I can ever go back to doing open mics again,
right?
Because
yeah,
it's so, and then he's like, I will drive anywhere to do this. It's like, yeah, yeah, it's worth it.
You know, it reminds me, because I've done some really horrible shows. Like, I mean, like where I kept a taser in my bra kind of shows. And
oh, like, you played in Brockton?
Yeah. And, you know, when I was running it. So it was like, I'm like, okay, I need to start setting some standards and some boundaries. And I've also turned venues down, venues that say, oh, we want to do comedy here. And it's a pool hall. And they have tournaments and they have leagues. And I go, what night of the week is good? And they're like, any night of the week. And so I went every night of the week. There is no good night of the week to do comedy there. So I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I go, how did you envision this? And they're like, well, we'll just move that pool table over. One night I was there watching karaoke. They were throwing darts near the person's head singing karaoke. I'm like, we're not.
Oh my God.
For a comic. I wouldn't do it to myself. And, you know, that's why, you know, people can quit because they don't think they're any good because they didn't get the audience response. But sometimes it is the audience.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is the audience.
Well, so, I learned this term again, circling back to Bogus. He calls those ambush mics, where you're going to the pool hall not to see a comedy show, to hang out with your buddy, to shoot, you know, pool, to have some beers. They're not the assholes because they're not listening to you. You know what I mean? You're interrupting their plans, you know, type things.
It's like playing at a subway stop. You know, it's just like, wait a second, guys. I'm just trying to get to and from work. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, I called it kamikaze comedy.
Yeah.
So when I ran the comedy at Anheuser-Busch, it was difficult like that. And it was difficult like that. And, you know, I would warn the comics, this is, sometimes it runs hot, sometimes it runs cold. Sometimes these people are shit faced off the tour and you can't control drunk. You know what I mean? But I learned early on doing parties, sometimes people will talk over you. They're there for their own party. As long as they have fun, that's the end goal. That's the result. They had a great time. They had a great experience. And if you keep that in mind going in, when you take the stage, it's all about them and their enjoyment. Sometimes when I did parties, people would just talk on one side and then I would just slightly turn my body and just focus on the ones who were paying attention. And I found that served me well. I still do that today in comedy. If I have a table that's really kind of loud, I kind of just turn away and pay attention to the people who are paying attention. However, I've seen the opposite, where a comic will actually address the table as being really loud. That makes me incredibly uncomfortable. I just give to the people who want, you know what I mean? And they ignore the people who don't.
Do you find that heckling is more prevalent now post-COVID than was pre-COVID? Or is it same amount of assholes on both sides of the, yeah.
Yeah. There's very few assholes in this world, Joe. It's just they move around a lot.
Yeah.
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 No, I've it was funny. I was at a show the other day, and the guy hosts, it's a real sweetheart. He's also the size of mid-70 Buicks. And I'm looking at one of the, you know, this guy is like 6'6", 350, and his shoulders are as wide as he is tall. And I was looking at one of the other comics on the side. I'm like, what is that guy thinking? I mean, Liam is a sweetheart.
But I love Liam. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the last guy I want asking me to be quiet a second time. You know, and it was at a nice venue. It was at the City Winery. It's like, dude, you know, but yeah, I guess people have always been assholes. So going forward, it's like, are you good with where the Empire is? Do you look for more venues? Do you, I mean, because business is business, and you know, the thing is, you want to grow a business, but you don't want to grow beyond your ability to manage the workflow.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
I definitely want another venue. And where you say with workflow, so I'm very organized. I live by my calendar. I put everything in my calendar. I have my Soho venue booked almost a year out, and the owner just reached out to me. She wants to start doing two shows a month, which is fantastic for me because it means I don't have to find something brand new. We have over 15-year relationship of working together, and I'm thrilled that she's ready to do more shows. I'd love another venue. And when it comes along and the conditions are right, though, because I am picky, I don't want televisions above a performer's head. Right. And I want a venue that's going to partnership with me. I can do it all alone. You can. But you know what? When two people are going in the same direction, you get so much more accomplished, so much quicker, faster. So I'd rather find a venue that could partner with me. I've met with one. It just didn't seem ideal. I went there when they didn't know I was there. And there was, I don't know how to say, there were just barflies that you knew were going to be a problem, and they were regulars. And I'm like, if this is our audience base, no, they will just be heckling. They will not be paying attention. They'll try to be on the show, part of the show. So I didn't feel like that was a good inducive space. And also the person I was communicating with had to keep going back and talking to their mommy and daddy. And I'm like, no, if I can't talk to mommy and daddy, who are the decision makers, we're not, this too much, you know, like playing telephone when we were kids. So I'm very particular about my venue. I also like to be able to pay the comics when I can. And I try to negotiate at least a free drink if I'm doing a showcase night, because they're driving and it's their gas. And I'm 100% for show and go, because your time is valuable too. You know?
No, that I've heard you say these things before, and it's just so refreshing. I mean, and again, that's, you know, some of the venues, it's like you do the Smitty's, they feed you, you know.
That's so nice.
It's so nice. I mean, and they have a decent, you know, it's good. It's a Beyond Burger. I'm a vegetarian, so it's very rare that you could find that. The next big question, when you go and do the parties that you do, are you consciously maybe thinking, okay, I'm selling X, Y, and C at this party, but I'm going to build my fan base at the same time? Is that something that you think about, or is that something that's been happening? Have you been able to successfully merge those two worlds together?
Absolutely. I call it cross-pollination. And they go together. So at my parties, I give out coupons for my comedy passes. I also give out coupons at every single comedy show. And I let people know, hey, you don't have to hold on to this coupon. You can take a picture of it, and that's as good. And then you can pass this along to somebody that you know. So I am constantly networking. It's the way I was wired. And at my parties, they have an opportunity to join my email list. With constant contact, you can categorize your email lists. So years ago, they used to have a Men in Motion show, and I was the opener for that show. What an incredible opportunity for me to be in front of 50 to 100 horny women celebrating a girl getting married or a birthday party. So that also gave me a huge pool to kind of fish from for parties and also give away free comedy passes. One of the things I did, I just thought it was brilliant, but basically it's like, enter here to win a free party for you and 10 friends.
Oh, nice.
So a lot of people won free parties. And then at the parties, some women didn't want to join the email for sex education, but they absolutely wanted to join my comedy email.
Nice. Which is secretly sex education.
Yeah. Yeah. In comedy on purpose, the initials are COP, C-O-P.
I want to talk a little bit now about just your comedy itself, okay. your cadence, your presence, and all that stuff. First of all, I should ask, is your father still with us?
My father passed last year in May.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry for your loss. What was his, because so much of your comedy is your conversations with him. How did he react to you being a comic? Did he love that you turned his colloquialisms and his folksy wisdom into hysterical bits?
What he said to my brother is, he goes, "Jesus Christ, she really took the piss out of me, didn't she?" And he knew that I sold sex toys, and my dad is a good generation older than my mom. I think their difference was about 15 years. He always married younger women, right? And he didn't like that I sold sex toys, but he wasn't embarrassed by the comedy. And I can remember him being like, probably people who can't afford to go anywhere. Your business is doing really well for those people. It's like probably like a little mini vacation for them.
And so if he wasn't thrilled with the quote unquote day job, he must have loved that your daughters have followed that same.
Oh, they never told him.
Oh, good. Okay.
Now, was he opposed to selling the sex toys, or is it just like thought you should be giving them away for free? Like, hey, these shouldn't be sold.
I don't know. I just told, I'm like, I don't demo the toys. Like, right. My clothes stay on the whole time, you know? Some people, it's a disappointment. Most it's a relief. Yeah.
Who was the most shocked in your world when you said, I'm going to go be a comic?
I don't think anybody, like, everybody said how funny I was and quick-witted, and I don't think anybody was really shocked. In fact, I would say everyone was pretty supportive. My mom, for instance, she goes to every single show. Nothing to do with the fact that I'm not allowed to do comedy about her. But every show.
That's absolutely awesome. I specifically have not let my mom come to any at any show. My sister's gone to a bunch, and I have a couple really supportive cousins, and it doesn't throw me, but I do. I'll say certain things, you know, for them, like almost like inside baseball I'll say like, oh, my father-in-law was from Everett, and I'll turn on but like humble brag, which is just a funny cadence thing to do, but it hits home because that's where all our white trash, you know, aunts and uncles and our parents are from. But I'll be like, and I pretty much do PG stuff, but there's just a couple times now and then I'll make a reference like here and there, and I'll be like, I don't think I can say that in front of my cousin Cindy, you know. And I don't talk about my mom a lot, but when I do, it's never what would you say, you like you know, when I mention my mom or something like that?
Well, I mean, you talk about how she's loud I think you mentioned drunk sometimes, but also how much she kind of pushed you, at least in the early comedy stuff, about how she pushed you during hockey, like, you know, as a kid and growing up being like a hockey mom. But yeah, mostly loud and drunk is what I gathered from your mother, from your comedy.
And you've known my mother for over 30 years. Am I off base?
Not as drunk, but much louder. You're downplaying her loudness.
So what is next with you as far as a comedian, not as far as a producer? Do you have goals or aspirations? Because I know so many people who've been doing comedy as long as you have are now shooting their own specials. Just in the past month, Joe and I went to see, you know, Steve Bjork tape his special, and that was such a fantastic night. He absolutely killed it. Last month, you know, Mike Katrobis shot his special. So is that something that you've thought of, or what as a comedian do you see over the near and a little bit down the road?
So my next, that sketch writing class that I'm taking, I've been playing with the idea for several years, and that's kind of how I work. I got to study the roots before I can pick the fruits. And my next is making little shorts. I want to make little funny shorts and sex ed videos and, you know, showcase a toy or an item with a link for purchase. So do kind of a network marketing for myself platform, but also sexually educate women and empower them. And I think I'm going to call it The Whole Show.
How's it spelled?
W-H-O-L-E for your whole health.
Okay. Just making sure.
But one of the little things we kind of came up with is my boyfriend will get out of bed, go in and brush his teeth, and then with the electric toothbrush, and then shut it off, but still hear it, and come back into the bedroom, and I'll wave to him with a toy, you know, from under the covers, and be like, "Hey!" And then cut to a clip about that toy, about that item, about the use, the benefits, the features, the warranty, that it's rechargeable. It's the best time to be alive. And then sell
best
it.
Time to be alive. Yeah. Would that be it? Would you be doing like two comedy channels, one with your not like sex toys thing and just comedy, or would it all be under one umbrella?
So I'm not sure yet, but I want to start with that. And I very much want to do more with comedy, in that I'm very analytical and I like studying things and I recognize patterns and formulas. And I note when things work and I note when they don't work. And I try not to repeat the not working things. And I'd love to share that with people. So I'd like to do more for the writing. For the comedy that I do with my dad, I'm not ready for a special yet. I see it evolving. My sister-in-law is from Costa Rica, and my God, there's a whole show there. And one of my brothers is very much like a mini version of my dad. And I'd like to incorporate all three of them. And when I have that written and when I have that developed, that will be my end and I will be ready for a special. But I need to still develop those two characters and then tie it all together. Because my favorite comedy is when one flows to the next and then you call back to the previous, but then you bring it forward and then back. And then when you end, it brings it all together. Just like, you know, the best concerts have that crescendo. So until I have that crescendo, I'm not ready yet for that. And that's when I'll be ready to headline, I feel, for solid. Yeah.
Gio, you got any thoughts?
Well, I'm just thinking with sex comedy, like recently Whitney Cummings has made like a thing where she put a special on OnlyFans, and that sort of seems to be like a new venue for like some comics whose comedy might not be, you know, or I guess suited for, you know, mainstream, like even like Instagram or YouTube or something like that. Like there's a lot of restrictions in place on those streaming platforms. So OnlyFans is kind of like, hey, if you want to tell really dirty jokes or, you know, edgy comedy, come here. Is that something that was even on your radar, or is that, that fit into your model?
No, and I'm so glad you said that. So my comedy's clean.
And even when I did my parties, I would say it's sassy, it's classy, it's educational, it's fun. It's not dirty, it's not grimy. It's meant to empower and educate and make women especially feel good about their bodies. But oftentimes men need to feel good about their bodies too. And our sexuality changes all through our lives. And to have been a sexual person most of my life, I want to share that. And when women get together and they share, especially intimate things, there's a freeness in that. And I call it the gathering of the goddesses. And it's just a feel good thing. At the end of the party, I know it's a great party when the women don't want to leave. When at the end of a comedy show, when people don't want to leave, they don't want to let go of that good feeling that they had. They want to make it last. And we do that. I do that with my parties. I do that with my shows. And that's my favorite. When they stick around, they don't want it to end.
See, I'm going to throw Joe, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was just going to say that like that idea of women being empowered by their sexuality and then gathering and getting together in groups and kind of sharing an experience, that's uniquely, I guess, a female thing, because a bunch of guys getting together, doing the same thing, being sexual, I don't know. It's a different energy. It ends a different way. I think fists are thrown sometimes. Like it's just it's a toxic environment for a lot of males.
The last thing I want to know about any of my friends is their porn history search browsers. I literally, you know, wanna you know absolutely, you know, nothing about.
Well, with that being said, don't send dick pics. Because we all get to see him.
No, you know, I have a filter on my phone that prohibits my dick from being pictured.
I love that.
While Joey's just talking, I was kind of, you know, coming up with a genius thing. You like when people stick around after the show at Soho, just tell the wait staff to delay giving them their check for 20 minutes.
They pick them out at 10. Yeah, Hudson needs to bed early. The show has to end by 9:10. That's like my hard stop, because people are like, I got to go to bed. I got to go. Oh. And I love that too, you know, to work so close from home. Because like you said, we'll go 2.5 hours. I still got to get up at 6 a.m. to go to work the next day.
That is insane. Alana, you were absolutely fantastic. Thank you for letting me bounce the schedule around so much. It's been crazy lately. But I want to say, it's like when I first saw you at Luna, your comedy just really struck a chord with me. I'm a bit older than you, but it's in that same range where, like, the voices that you throw out, like the regional stuff that I really identify with. And then, like I said, when I got to see a show that you put together and that you put up, a buddy who I really think that was his first, and I was interested to see how he did, because, you know, I saw him at Mike's, and there's a lot of people you see at Mike's who just kill, own an open mic that's at 10 o'clock in a bar, you know, which is a lot different than, okay, this isn't a restaurant. The median age is probably 40-ish.
At least, yeah.
And it's like, how will that translate over? But then I get there and I saw a bunch of other people that I know from the scene, and it's just great how supportive you are with the people who are, you know, just trying to take that next step from, you know, owning the local open mics to getting booking and then having to develop as, oh, this doesn't work here like it did there, and it helps people become better. But what you're doing for the community is just absolutely fantastic, and I'm just glad that I get to refer to you as a friend at this point.
Thank you. Right back at you. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. So Alana, where can people find you on the internet if they want to do business with you or, you know, be in your business?
Yeah, sure. They can email comedyonpurpose@gmail.com to join my email list. They can go find me on Facebook, Comedy on Purpose. I don't have a website at this time, but you can always join my email list and we'll stay in touch.
Are you on Instagram, YouTube, or Facebook?
Pretty passively. Yeah. So my quest and contact, I try to duplicate my time and my effort So anything I put out in an email newsletter, I auto connect it to my Facebook and to my Instagram, but I'm not as active on there as I would like to be, but it is there.
Do you have a show? What is the next show?
So this next show is going to be really cool, really special. It is April 18th. And this show, I have a double headliner. I have Ace Aceto and Scott Higgins, and they're going to do a live podcast from the show. And I think we're going to do it just before the actual show. And then I have Chris Sinitos, who is going to open. He sent me a video. I haven't seen him, but he looks really good and up and coming. So that'll be a really fun and exciting show. In May, I do have one other venue that books shows with me intermittently. They put out shows free to the public, and that's Stonebridge Country Club. I haven't gotten my date from them yet, but we're every third Thursday at Soho. And we're also going to be doing a Mother's Day show in the afternoon and a Father's Day show at Soho.
Oh, and Jacques, don't forget.
We bought our first home and we had to put in a septic system. And whenever I told my father about how much it cost for all this soil, truckloads of soil, he's like, Alana, you don't buy dirt. You dig it up here. And you move it over there. You got an acre of land, for Christ's sake. You can build a sledding hill for the kids. You know what? You'll be buying bottled water next. Which I do. Yeah, you're paying someone to drink it for you? Last year, we decided to put in a rock wall. You guys ever buy a couple pallets of rocks? It's expensive. I told my dad, he's like, Alana, you don't buy rocks. We live in the Granite State, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah.